Okay.
Good morning, slash, buenos días.
For the first part of the collaboration. To let you know how you say in Spanish, buenos días. Good morning. Okay, so I'm about to talk about the importance of establishing modern collaborations with more civilized researchers than us, probably. And what challenges and opportunities these type of projects can bring. So I'm going to start off by talking to you about the La República Argentina, it's like the official name of Argentina, it's a republic. And we do have like 23 provinces and a capital federal, a federal capital, which is an autonomous district. You see here this little lodge here in the province of Buenos Aires is the capital federal. So the total population of Argentina is about 40 million people. In the province of Buenos Aires, which is this yellow province you see here, 50 million people live. So that's a lot of people inside of Argentina living there. And in this little black spot, which is this city of Buenos Aires, about 10 million people live in the greater Buenos Aires. So, when you find an Argentinian, probably he or she is going to be from Buenos Aires. Yeah? Because one every four or one every three people are from Buenos Aires. There's a saying in Argentina, all the people from the interior say that God lives in Buenos Aires. Because they have to go to Buenos Aires to access services and to access diagnosis. And they're always criticizing that God lives in Buenos Aires and does not go into the interior of the country. So that's a problem, actually. Okay, in relation to the Argentine health system, we have a very fragmented system. We have a coexistence of different health systems. We are generally a very fragmented and disorganized country. But we try to do our best, really. There's a public health system, and the public hospitals are inserted into this public health system. Health there is absolutely for free. So anybody can go and have health at a public health hospital for free. Generally, very low resource population go to the hospitals. I myself was trained in a public hospital. Then there's the middle sector, where there's prepaid or health insurance systems, are called prepagas and obras sociales, you need to have a formal job to access this type of insurance. So if your job is under the table or informal, you're not accessing this. And then, obviously, you always have like the private health system, so people that have money can always go and pay the doctor they want. They can choose. So there's a lot of differences depending on the socioeconomic status you belong to. And it's a federal system, so each province is quite autonomous. You remember those 23 provinces I talked to you about. And each province has its own organization and a different adherence to specific health legislation. For example, the National Disability Law, which includes the ASD, in some provinces there's adherence to this law, in some provinces not. And the Ministry of Health, which is like the central institution, let's say, is quite powerless in some respect. I mean, provinces are more powerful than the Minister of Health itself because of the federal system. Okay, in relation to the educational system, we have generally 12 years of school education divided into primary and secondary education. There are private and public schools, again, depending, you have money, you don't have money, you go to a public school, which is absolutely free, or you go to a private school. Universities, the same. There are public universities, so you can study at university for free in Argentina, but there are also private universities where you have to pay. And the types of schooling, in general, in the general setting, are mainly three. There are the common schools, where all the sort of typically developing children go. There's the recovery schools, where the kids that are sort of thrown out of the common schools, which have who have learning behavior or behavior problems, they go to the recovery schools and then they can get into the system again of the common schools. And then there's special schools. Mainly, they have kids with intellectual disability. So there's a lot of interchange in this system. Kids with ASD, they are in the three systems, depending obviously on their level. So what is the state of ASD research in Argentina? There's a cultural perspective. Research is not that very common, really. And generally, it's quite difficult with children. Children are like very protected in Argentina, and nobody wants to make like experiments with children. Research infrastructure in general is very limited, and ASD research is almost absent. I mean, there are some people trying to do some stuff, but really very, very absent. And there are very few neuroscience research labs in the country. There is a big lack of epidemiological data. Really, I mean, every time a journalist or somebody asks you, okay, how many autistic kids do we have in the country? Okay, the CDC last week said that the United States, that is our answer, always, you know? Okay, and in Europe, yeah, but, well, but here? Well, no, we don't know. We see a lot of kids, but we don't know what is the prevalence. So, and it's quite difficult to obtain local funding because the funding is generally related to other more important things, maybe. And a big problem, I see it as a problem, it's a very strong presence of psychoanalysis in Argentina. Now, Buenos Aires and Paris are the cities where more psychoanalysts are in the world. And psychoanalysis is still taught in the main psychological universities, so psychologists are generally psychoanalysts. It's absolutely interwoven in the culture, so you say, hey, let's go and have dinner tonight. No, I have my analyst. Yeah, really. And psychoanalysts, they can be very creative. I don't know if anybody listens to a psychoanalyst sometimes. I mean, they're really so articulated, so creative, but they don't know much about early brain development. They don't know about the importance of early intervention with kids, and they are very anti-medicalization. They are very anti-DSM. They are very anti-medication in general. They are very anti-research generally, because each kid is subjective and you cannot group people together, yeah? So this is quite a big problem, actually, because the training is done under this paradigm. So if you want to do something more related to research, how it's done here, I mean, you're gonna have to fight these people, probably. Or make friends with them, I don't know. Convince them somehow. Okay. So, what is a research collaboration? I don't know how to define this, but I look for a paper saying, okay, maybe there is someone who decided to write about what is a research collaboration. So these two guys, I think they are, Katz and Martin, they wrote in this journal, Research Policy, a few years ago, they wrote about what a research collaboration is. So what they were saying is, as we have seen, there have been apparently few attempts to examine the question of what constitutes a research collaboration. Instead, the concept has been largely taken for granted, as though we all know exactly what is meant by the term. Yet, is the concept of collaboration so obvious and unproblematic? Maybe it's not. The dictionary's definition of collaboration suggests the working together of individuals to achieve a common goal. So, a research collaboration could be defined as the working together of researchers to achieve the common goal of producing new scientific knowledge. However, this begs the question of exactly how closely researchers have to work together in order to constitute a collaboration. And they keep on saying, well, they do suggest some putative criteria for distinguishing collaborators from other researchers. And they say, well, generally collaborators would normally include the following: those who work together on the research project throughout its duration or for a large part of it, or who make frequent or substantial contributions, those whose names are post appear in the original research proposal, or those responsible for one or more of the main elements of the research. But I always ask myself, I don't know, if somebody has like a brilliant idea, and that can change absolutely the course of collaboration. Maybe it's not an idea coming from the research collaborator. Is that person also a collaborator, for example? So, the Swiss have made these beautiful principles of research partnership, which I'm going to read now. And they what they say is, okay, these are the principles of doing a good research partnership. So, first, decide on the objectives together. Second, build up mutual trust. I mean, you have to believe in the person you're working with, probably. Share information, develop networks, share responsibility, create transparency. This is quite a job in Argentina. Monitor and evaluate the collaboration, disseminate the results, apply the results, share the profits equitably, increase research capacity, and build on achievements. Okay, this is the ideal world. And that's, we try to sort of get there. So, what are, in general, the benefits of international collaborations in ASD research to US researchers? Well, I guess maybe expanding the understanding of autism, promoting scientific advances, and publications. I mean, journals are mainly northern, yes? I mean, in Argentina, only 3 journals are indexed in Medline. One is a pediatrics journal, one is an adult psychiatry journal, and I don't remember the third one. But, yeah, I mean, the names in southern hemispheres are not so much in Medline as northern collaborators. And here I see it's very important how many times your name appears in Medline, you know? It's like sort of directly proportioned, directly correlated to the importance of you in the field. So we don't exist, I must tell you. I don't exist, that's for sure. So, to LAMI partners, obviously, I mean, we have a lot of benefits. To benefit the local scientific research, to influence infrastructure development for autism public health initiatives, and to access the needed technology and opportunities for advanced training. Okay, so more benefits of international collaboration. To US researchers, I think that maybe getting to know other idiosyncrasies and the role of creativity in poor settings is quite important. We have to be creative. I mean, we don't have any choice. We don't have the money not to be creative, you understand? So, for example, and I put example given diapers. There was this guy who I met in an interview, actually, in a TV interview, who said, look, oh, you're interested in doing a screening project. Why don't you go and talk to the diaper companies? Why don't you put a screening tool on the diaper? I mean, nobody can not buy diapers for their kids when they're 18 months, whatever. You're gonna get everyone. Put it on the diaper. Okay, I said, oh my God, that's such a good idea. Yeah, so I told my US collaborators, and I said, oh, yeah, that could really be a good idea. So, you know, creativity, that's a good thing. And, well, obviously, the analysis of cultural factors. I mean, we're all very interested in knowing how ASD is portrayed in different cultures. Won't say anything else about that. As an Argentine researcher, obviously, the effect of the international backup on media and political authorities is very important. I mean, if we go and say, hey, you know what? Serious people are trusting us and believing in us. Okay, people are gonna start and listen to us. Really, I mean, journalists are gonna start and listen to us. If we don't go with that, they all just go away. And obviously learning about building research infrastructure. Now, challenges of international collaborative partnerships. Okay, this famous imperialism sense, no? That when northern collaborators come to southern wildlife, they're sort of, okay, the power and the glory and the connaissance goes to the void. I know, but it's a myth, I think. But a lot of people think that way, eh? And it was so nice. I mean, we had the luck. Our collaborators were like, we don't want to go in. We don't want to invade. We were saying, no, come. Really, you can be of great benefit, but are you sure? Because they're going to see that as imperialistic and... No, come. And I guess maybe that what they didn't want is to get in touch with such a bunch of crazy people, probably. They were saying, oh my God, where are we going into? So, not only the imperialism sense, the sustainability also, study intervention outside the research setting. I mean, organization-wise and funding, what happens if when that collaboration finishes, that goes away? I mean, are we going to be able to sustain that? Or not. And in the case of prevalence studies, when you do early detection, probably Nid is going to talk about this, you cannot do early detection of something if you're not going to offer something after that. I mean, that is not ethical. You have to have a plan that if you're going to go and look for something, you're going to offer something to those people. So more challenges, because there's more challenges than opportunities, generally. Obviously, like Angelina talked, the translation, adaptation, and validation of screening and diagnostics tools in Argentina, I mean, we don't... Okay, here what I have to say is, first, we do have a validated MCHAT in Argentina, but sometimes it doesn't work in some types of populations. In the public hospitals, for example, people don't understand all the questions. Pediatricians have to go with them and explain them to you. So, are they useful, really? I mean, shouldn't we be trying to elaborate our own screening instruments and not importing them from outside? And there's another thing here, it's the cost, right? I mean, sometimes you think, why are screening and, well, not screening, because they're generally free, but why are diagnostic instruments costing so much? We're trying to diagnose kids. Why do they cost so much? And well, and the problems sometimes with migration. Well, Valeria is here, she translated the ADIR into Spanish. She has to do a training this year, so it'll be the first training in ADIR for people inside Argentina. And you know what? We have a Secretary of Commerce. His name is Guillermo Moreno, so you can remember his name. He blocks all imports, including books, manuals, toys. He blocks. So you cannot go in with. So Valeria doesn't know how to smuggle the ADIRI inside the country. Okay? And when I tried to get the ADOS, I had to make a big lie in the customs. Saying, please, I had to beg, big lie, please, because there were toys, there were Fisher Price toys inside, and you cannot compete with national industry of toys. Okay? So, why don't we make things that we can use easier and cheaper? Right? Okay, then the concept of payment to research volunteers. This is generally, I mean, this I learned in the UK. When I was in the UK, it was very common to pay to research volunteers. And I found it, wow, this is so striking. Because I was thinking, if you offer money in Argentina for research volunteers, I mean, they're going to make up an autistic kid, you know, just to grab that incentive. So we have to think about other incentives, not money. That's for sure. And then, well, the difference of family and researcher expectations. Yeah, I mean, we know that there's always different and often conflicting cultural construction about what clinical research is, how it is conducted, and what is to be gained from it. Parents maybe are not interested in some type of research. I mean, parents are interested in research that is going to be useful for their kids, that is going to impact the lives of their kids. Maybe they are not interested in this gene, and well, we don't even have the money to buy the machines for the genetic studies, you know. So what are the researchers studying? I mean, probably we should go much into more clinical research and treatment effectiveness research. But there's such a big gap between research and clinical assistance. It's like when in London they say, mind the gap. Well, really, mind the big gap there's being between research and clinical use of what we're discovering in research. Okay, still more challenges. Research priority. We were very lucky because the research priorities were quite similar, but there can be the possibility where research priorities are not the same between collaborators. Then there's the North-South collaboration versus the national research networks. So maybe if there's a collaboration between international partners going to like steal influence into the national research networks. The clashing agendas and values. Well, I have some funny, a little anecdote. We were going to dinner with my co-PI and a television guy who was going to do awareness about autism. So before going to dinner, my co-PI, American, said, okay, what are we going to address in this meeting? We're going to dinner. And she said, what? I was thinking about the wine I was going to drink. She was thinking about what we were going to talk about in that meeting, you know? So different agendas in some, well, in values, you know? In Argentina, there's a lot of things that are done, not illegally, well, almost illegally, probably. You know, for example, getting back to the tools. There's no police here, no? Okay.
So, it is recorded.
It is, oh dear. Okay, you know, I mean, photocopying is a, I don't do it much, I promise. But photocopying in Latin American countries is an absolutely normal and cheaper way of getting to instruments. So nobody is going to buy, you know, the ADIR booklets every time they finish. Sorry to say this. Sorry. But it's the truth. I mean, it's what happens. Everything is photocopied. So, well, we cannot afford it. So, obviously, my American peers, when you say, well, you know, photocopying, they go, oh my God, what are you doing? Well, what do we do? You know, I mean, it's the way it is. So, well, and then also the benefits of research for local people, right? So this is the team, the example of ongoing collaborative international partnership. I mean, how did we meet and start working together? Because I think there's always a luck factor, chance factor, yeah? I mean, just being in the right place at the right time and just when paths interconnect. So, Lisa Crowen and Maria Masolo. Well, there is also the truth that Maria Masolo is Argentinian, right? So she probably went one day into Lisa's office and said, hey, why don't we do a project in Argentina? So, and Lisa, yeah, why don't we do that? I guess so. So they just, you know, they looked up in Google who could they find because they needed a local partner. I mean, who are we going to work with? And there is where chance gets into the situation. And the first people that were in contact with them were us, I mean people from my team. And that's where everything, and obviously there's got to be good feeling, no? Because you can, I mean, you're not going to collaborate with someone with you don't get along with. So this was the project, the intended project. Autism Public Health Initiative in Argentina. It was meant to be a pilot project of 2 years. The co-PIs were Lisa and myself, and the co-investigators were Maria and Karina and Christian and Viviana. And this was the long-term goal of the project, to build infrastructure in Argentina at the local and national levels, to improve public and provider awareness of ASD, to develop and support research, to implement best practices in the screening, diagnosis, and treatment of ASD. As you see, very little aims. But dreaming is for free, you know? again, the cost. So this was the idea. And this was aimed, we had three aims. Aim number one, to develop and solidify relationships with stakeholders who can influence infrastructure development for autism public health initiatives. We got pretty good here. I mean, we got till here, to now. Conduct a needs assessment to identify knowledge gaps, resource needs, and priority research questions, and develop culturally relevant strategies for raising autism awareness in Argentina. The aim number two was to develop and conduct a community-based and culturally sensitive early detection project in a representative mid-sized Argentine city to establish the screening prevalence of ASD among toddlers using the MCHAT. And aim three was to develop a feasible, generalizable, and cost-effective model program of autism service delivery using an innovative way to reach low-resource and underserved population. We were thinking to use the Early Start Denver model. So some of us had to go get trained to the US. So this is like the best example of the difference, you know? But different is beautiful, really. So let's take a research meeting, yeah? The concept of a research meeting in the US. Say, that's the picture I took from a meeting in the US and in Kaiser Permanente, I think. You know, everything's so neat and with a lot of technology around it, and I mean, there's punctuality, planification and organization, duration, agenda, like, what are we going to talk about? Okay, so the US, you know, they go, you have from 9 to 10, we're going to talk 15 minutes about this, 15 minutes about that. Okay, yeah, and at 10 we have another meeting, bye-bye, present your things, go away. In Argentina, and this is quite a calm picture, because I could have put up, you know, people with swimming bathing suits, but I didn't. So, you know, we just meet, we just go together, doesn't matter where, doesn't matter, I mean, there's mate, you know, there's this thing that we Argentinians drink, it's like a sort of a peace pipe that goes together. We don't have like an agenda. We just talk about the waves of things, you know? And these meetings can last for 6 or 7 hours maybe. And we really talk about everything. It's not just the research. But, you know, there's different ways of getting to the same point. We do get to the same point. It's just maybe a little more fun. So, I'm very finishing. So what does the future hold? Well, we do have to find alternative funding mechanisms. So again, creativity. And to consolidate the creation, me and my colleagues were creating at the same time as this collaboration was beginning to go into life, to consolidate the creation of a non-profit organization called Panacea, which has a lot of aims, really, to promote autism awareness campaigns, to implement early detection strategies nationwide, to provide universal services, to train professionals and educators, to develop research projects, including collaborations. I mean, this has really grown, and in the last, this is my last slide, we have a pink house, not a white house. It's pink. It's called Casa Rosada, the National Government House. It's the one thing in the back. And this April it was lit blue, yeah, because it's got the president, and we were, I mean, all the parent organizations really, with Panacea, we were really able to do a lot of, you know, noise. And it was fantastic. So all this first part of awareness of the national collaboration, really, of the international collaboration, we're getting there. I mean, there's lots of, you know, TV programs and radio, and we're making a lot of noise, and people are very interested in everything. And so I want to thank all of you for the opportunity of being here, and Marceline, and Angelina, and Needy, and Richard, and Tamara, who's over there, and especially my international collaborators and my national collaborators, obviously, but because it has really been a pleasure. I mean, I hope everybody has like an experience like we've had, really. And thank INFAR too, because it's the place where the networks begin and continue, really. So it's a great experience. So thank you.